they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get we found ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
All right, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome down the Security Rabbit Hole to yet another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. This is Raph. I'm riding solo today. James has got something or other. He's probably on an airplane, if I know James. But I am really excited. So, guys, those of you that have listened for a while or talked about this in person, you know I do this podcast, one, because I thought there was a void many, many years ago that somebody just needed to fill, about kind of an office-friendly, safe-for-work, learn-something type of podcast on enterprise security. And two, I just want an excuse to sit down for an hour and talk to people I really want to talk to. And sometimes I get lucky enough to do this twice and interview somebody that both has been a mentor and a good friend over the years. So on that note, back with we'll call it a redux from episode 102 from July 21st, 2014, welcome back to the show, Mr. Jim Tiller.
Thank you very much, Raph. It's really great to be back, and it's good to hear your voice, man. It's been far too long, and it's really good to be back on the show. I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's going to be interesting.
It's been a while. So you and I, like, we recorded that episode, I think, either recorded or I published it literally a week after I joined Accuvant at the time, and you were still back at HP. And I had just moved on, funny enough. we're kind of back to that.
Exactly.
So I thought as we were kind of prepping folks for what we're going to talk about on this show, if you go back in the show notes of episode 102, 15 years, what's changed, what hasn't? it's been five, what's changed, what hasn't? Complexity is a camouflage for bad guys. Jim, I love that quote, and I'm going to ask you if any of that has changed. We wanted to talk about a little bit about the fundamentals and why we're still failing, and then where will the this is the, we're going to end with this, and this is brilliant, and I'm glad we didn't prep this, but where will security be as a discipline in 10 years? I asked you that 5 years ago. We're halfway down the line. We'll see what you're thinking now. So let's start with first and foremost, you know, what are you up to, man? It's been a while.
I know, right? Well, you know, in many ways, thanks to you, I got connected with Optiv, right? I mean, with Accuvant and Fishnet coming together, and we had an opportunity to continue to work there together for a bit. But, you know, still supporting services from an operations perspective. So it's been exciting. And, you know, I just celebrated, as of today, believe it or not,
wow,
my 4-year anniversary with Optiv. So it's been an interesting run, and we're continuing to really focus on where things are going. And so it's been exciting. And but personal wise, things are good. No complaints. Just keep pounding away. But security is still very near and dear to me. I've been doing it for a really long time, as you know. And I try to stay up with kind of what's kind of going on and get a chance to talk to customers and people out there in the field. And it's been a lot of fun to kind of watch all this evolve and or not evolve, depending on your perspective.
There you go.
Over the last couple of decades, if you will. But it definitely stays interesting. It keeps you. May not keep you awake at night. Hopefully, it doesn't keep you awake at night. But it's been a lot of fun. So
well, you know,
things are very good.
Jim, I gotta tell you, when I first met you many years ago, you had joined HP, and I was like, holy crap, we've got one of the guys from ages ago joining us back and coming back to joining HP. And I was like, yeah, this is so awesome. And people are like, yeah, I've heard that name before. Somewhere. I'm like, have you looked at the bookshelf behind you? Because there's about at least 10 books up there where that guy that I'm talking to has managed to write. Like, when we talk about the folks that built this industry, your name is one of the first 10 that's got to get mentioned. And you're probably one of the quiet. You don't self-promote a lot, and you know, which makes you completely unlike everybody else in this industry.
It just warms me to hear you say that, Raph. You know, I really appreciate it, man. I guess I don't sell myself enough, But I really appreciate you saying that. It means a real a lot to me. And
I've got a bunch of your books, so I mean, I always like to I always like to stock a bookshelf with stuff that was relevant when I got into this 20 some odd years ago, and may still be relevant now. But all right, so it's been a long time since we got into security. So what do you think has changed in the last health since we last talked 5 years ago? Like, it's been just over 5 years. Like, what has changed?
I think some of the more obvious ones, I guess, everybody sees is we're still fighting sort of the vulnerability piece. The whole concept around technology, it's always ebbing and flowing, right? When I first got into security, it's very technology-based, doing pen testing, and then it starts getting into compliance. Then we started talking about risk that became heavily loaded. And then it was like, well, how do we deal with the vulnerabilities? And then it was, how do we deal with threats? And you see this sort of cyclic approaches up and down, back and forth, to how security is meandering through all these challenges as threats become more, you know, effective and impactful, and we just keep fighting them off. And you see this evolution of technology. And I would say the one thing that's always stood out to me is when I got into it, there were like five security solutions at best, right? I mean, firewalls were, you know, we were still shoving floppies into Cisco gear. Now you can't throw a stone without, you know, bouncing off 17 security vendors. I mean, there is dozens and dozens of technology solutions that are solving very more and more unique problems and more of a finite spectrum of capability. And the depth is getting deeper while it's getting a little bit more narrow, more focused. And I think that's pretty cool. However, there's a huge byproduct of that, and it's something that we've lived with. I'll tell you a quick story. I remember when IDS first came out, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, what is this thing, right?
Rob Graham.
Yeah. And so people would buy these boxes and just flip them on and turn on all the signatures, and they were wondering, like, now I got to hire somebody to keep this thing kind of, you know, making sense. Yeah. And we're still dealing with that same dynamic. We keep throwing technology at solutions, throwing technology at problems, thinking it's going to solve that problem. It doesn't, don't realize that, you know, it can help you solve problems, but it still takes an army surrounded around that with other technology or other humans and other capabilities, applications to make it all kind of come together. And so as more and more technology comes out, we're fighting more and more with how we overlap them, the same concept of defense in depth still plays. So I think if I would say one thing is what's really changed is that the problems become a little bit harder. The threats have become, you know, more impactful, but at the same time, the technology has made it more complex. I mean, everything is just, the complexity has just exploded, especially, I would say, over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Well, that plays well into the complexities of camouflage for bad guys, yeah. Which we'll tackle in just a second. But before we do that, I've said this a couple of times recently, and I think it bears repeating, because I want to get your opinion on it, because if anybody would get this, you would. When you look at the security solution space, and you alluded to the fact that now we're solving kind of more niche, more complex problems, so they're narrower but deeper. I said this a while ago, and it was the gentleman I said it to was not popular because he was the founder of one of these companies. But I basically said we've got an economy right now in security of features. They're not full. They're not products. They're just features. Like a company, see, it's founded based on this feature that nobody else has, and they try to make a. In an effort to, I mean, I guess that's the right way to do it, right? In an effort to try to make it go mainstream, they build a product around it, and suddenly, rather than, I mean, what I would think the right thing to do would be to integrate it into some bigger platform. I'm just crazy here. But what ends up happening is, this is how you get your complexity, right? You end up with, you know, a thing that solves one use case, and you have that one use case of a problem in your organization. So you buy a tool that solves this one use case, and you buy another tool that solves another use case, and you got 37 tools that solve 37 use cases, and which covers about 10% of your security problem. And then you add, you know, and multiply and divide here, and suddenly it's that complexity problem. Do you agree that we've got features running amok here?
I absolutely totally agree, and I think there's actually a couple things that contribute to that, and I think one of the main ones is, let's be honest, is the investment community, right? So if I see a niche and nobody's dealing with it, and as a smart guy or gal, I can go out, start a company, program it, build a solution, and go sell it to customers, but really what I'm trying to do is retire. So you're trying to set this company up for being acquired because there's just so much absorption within the market. You know, what I remember times when, you know, M&As would make, you know, headlines, right, in the security space, real big giant moves, right? Now it's just like popcorn, boom, 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 and people are acquiring these capabilities, these features, and some of those features are popping up because of the economics around that, kind of setting themselves up for acquisition or things of that nature, because they're small and they're niche, that kind of space. Well, what's also happening is not all of them are getting acquired, right? So then that means you have this sort of explosion of people trying to be entrepreneurs and, you know, changing jobs and looking and saying, well, you know what, I think I know how to do this better. And so we get this influx of, in some cases, a lot of really cool stuff, right? But it just doesn't have a home. But there are companies out there that says that's a meaningful, like you say, feature, and they acquire, they purchase it, right? And if you go to any RSA or Black Hat or whatever, you know, there's this huge rooms full of all these folks, right?
RSA there was more than I could conceivably understand with my tiny little brain.
Yeah, totally, right? And so the net effect is that you have this situation with customers out there trying to solve very complex problems, and they have these really cool technologies that are out there. And so we usually find, either through third-party consulting or through their own processes, trying to bond these together and make sense of it all. And then that actually adds to more acquisition of other data solutions to bind it all together, you know. And so it's creating this interesting technology economy, if you will, on both sides. On the one side, through people selling and building capabilities and these features as independent products that we're forced to try to tie them together. And on the flip side, you have the commercial aspects and the investor community, understandably so, trying to make the most out of, you know, what's the next pony in this race I want to bet on. It's a very interesting dynamic.
Well, and an unpopular opinion, but this is kind of how we've gotten where we are. It seems like most of those employed by our industry aren't actually trying to solve the greater problem. They're just trying to get rich so they can retire, as you put it, right? So it makes it very difficult to, as an end user, end consumer of the security product space and services space, to really solve anything, because the tools one-up each other. One gets bought, one goes away. There's 100+ endpoint security tools, EPP, EDR, LOL, OMG, and you're just like, I don't, you know, your security leader at a mid-size to an enterprise is an entirely different animal, like the large enterprises, but in a mid-size company, which is the breadth, kind of the widest breadth of area, surface area in terms of security problems, and you have, it's a full-time job trying to figure out what tools are out there, much less how to operate them and keep them operationalized. I think that's where the difficult part is, and I think that's a lot of where you spend a lot of your expertise, is around that, and come back to that complexity is the camouflage for bad guys, right? As the CISO of a company, or security director, VP of security, SVP of security, whatever your job title is, you've got so many. One, you have to understand the problems you're trying to solve, so like mentally create a threat model for the organization, which, mind you, very few people actually know how to do or bother with. Mm-hmm. And then, right? And then you've got this patchwork quilt of technologies and open source and closed source and commercial and services and partners and this. And that creates insane levels of complexity. How has that evolved over the last couple of years? I think it's just gotten worse. You agree?
It's gotten a lot worse. And I'm trying to find a way to articulate this correctly, but think about this. There's so many options out there that each CISO, for example, whatever, insert letters here, somebody's responsible, they have their own views of security, their own business challenges. They're unique in their own right. So while we have an avalanche of standards and compliance requirements, there's also, they want to accomplish something, and then they go to an event like RSA or pick your poison, and they see this technology, and they go, wow, that does exactly what I want. Right, I need that. It plugs that hole, right? Because now there's a full menu of options out there, and then you pack on top of that some really big solutions that are entirely effective. You know, the really monsters, you know, the SailPoints or CyberArks, for example, they're not inexpensive. They're highly effective, but they take a long time to implement, and they're barely, and to get the most out of them, you you deeply integrate them into your environment, as an example. I think those are great products, obviously. But so you have this on one hand, a bunch of small, very capable tools that are affordable, that solve that pinhole. And then on the other end, you have these very complex solutions. And you're trying to find out which one of these fit best. Ironically, is you're left now with all these different tools that put all these pinholes together, but you still can't connect the dots on keeping the threat at bay. And you said something very insightful about, you know, the comment about are people really taking a look at a threat. And I'll wrap this in a more unpleasant statement, is that if you look at the most, you know, highly attacked CVE vulnerabilities kind of thing, they're from 2016 and 2017,
yeah,
right?
They are.
And then I will tell you, we've all done our research, right? You know, we've been around for a while, so we've seen all the hacks, right? And the really gnarly ones, the ones that cause a lot of problems, are the ones that result in millions or billions being, fraudulent activities all over the world. It kind of comes down to the same old stuff: bad passwords or somebody clicking on a link they really shouldn't. And so it's kind of interesting. It's like we're trying to fight this off. And it's become like its own noise, when in fact there's still some very fundamental things that we struggle with as an industry. And we're seeing progression. We're seeing more and more people buy into multi-factor and doing types of things with password management. But, you know, we still have these old problems keep surfacing, but we are really trying to tackle what's the next new thing that's going to help me close that pinhole, or what's the next new big giant technology I'm going to, you know, hook my trailer to with the board that says it's going to solve these problems. It is an unenviable task. It is insurmountable in many ways. You have so much pressure from within, so much pressure from above. You got market pressure, opinions of other people. You have all these technologies saying they're going to solve world hunger, and you got to find a way to stitch it together. And it's a difficult time to be in cybersecurity, more so than ever it has been.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, and you know, I've been, you and I have both been on the provider side for quite some time now, but I've also sat on the other side of that table for a while, and I make a conscious effort to avoid some of those terrible mistakes, you know, those unforgivable sins of I can solve every problem you have, or I don't need to hear you tell me what your problems are. I already know. It's like no, you don't. Every organization is just unique enough, and I think that's the problem. Is we struggle with complexity, so we falsely label or maybe mentally make that swap because it's easier to admit that our organizations are too complex for us to simply handle, versus the adversaries are just that much more difficult. And as you put it, it's not that they're wasting creating a 0 day for every attack. They're not. They're it's the same. It's really a lot of the same old, but it's just stuff that we haven't gotten to. But and you look at like the large enterprises, right? The large breaches that have happened, where the processes are there, but simply somebody makes a mistake, a mental mistake, a calculation on a spreadsheet's missed. You miss patching a host. All the good intentions are there, and you miss something, and boom, you end up on the news in a catastrophic breach. And you're like, but we did everything. We did our best. We literally did the best we could, and like we simply missed one. And Jeremiah Grossman, a number of years, said, and I keep using this because, I'll keep attributing to him, but I keep using this because it makes so much sense. Say you've got 9 critical SQL injection vulnerabilities on your website, you patch 8 of them, how much more secure are you? Like, if you do the math tells you one thing, but if you've been in security long enough, you go, none?
Zero.
Right?
Zero. Like, it's absolutely zero.
Because the target attack, and the answer is really it depends. Because like one of the things that we do a good job or at the day job here is we classify sort of the types of attackers, and I try to make that clear to customers and internal and external. But it's like you've got 3 types of attackers: the A, B, and C league, right? The C League will, you know, that's the bored kids. That's kind of where the world started when we were getting into this industry. It's the kids home on spring break. They're just going to mess around for a while and impress their friends or try to mine some Bitcoin or whatever they're going to do. No big deal. They're not trying to rule the world. The B Leaguers are like, all right, I know some things. I can write some custom code if I have to. I can be a little bit persistent, but I ain't going to jail for this stuff, right? And the A Leaguers are not going to be deterred. I mean, they're not going to look at a problem and say, oh, they've patched. All right, I'm going to move on to the next company. Like, I need that document from that company, from that guy's personal laptop. It doesn't matter what it takes. I will get there. And so the first ones you can stop. The second ones you can detect. The third one's like, well, I mean, if the federal government can't stop them, the best organizations in the world can't stop them, then maybe it's not about stopping them. Maybe it's trying to minimize the damage. And that's kind of where I think security has gotten to, is we have to figure out who we're playing against across the table, right? And that's why I bring it back to threat modeling, because you have to know, like, at least have a reasonable idea of what kind of business you're in, what are the processes that can or cannot be affected, who's coming after them, and you go, all right, now I got an idea of what kind of strategy to employ.
So I 1,000,000% agree with you, and I'm very curious to see if this came up in the original episode from 5 years ago, but one is I suggested probably around 7, 8, 10 years ago that the entire concept of security would move into the philosophy of fraud, because it would become less about stopping for the exact reasons you just mentioned. You can only plug so many holes, and then it's just a matter of dealing with it at that point.
Yeah.
Right. And we've actually seen this, not to kind of stay in the sort of market view of the world, but we've seen organizations that got hacked 10 years ago and their stock would just plummet. Right. And that used to be the big FUD component, right? Yeah. Now they get hammered and it's not even a blip on the radar.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is that the world's become softened to it a little bit. And I suggested years ago that it would move into sort of an incident response mantra. You remember we had this conversation back at HP. I mean, that's like 8 years ago, right?
Yeah,
we would talk about this stuff a long time ago. And even back when you go back to like 2001, when I was working at Lucent and Bell Labs, this was what we talked about a lot. It was the whole concept of the ability to detect and take automated action on it, right? And to sort of get ahead of the hack or get involved with the hack as it's happening, to at least minimize that damage and find ways of quickly, you know, create more of a resilient environment, which, by the way, that whole philosophy got adopted by IBM and the big mainframe stuff. So then I think that's an extreme version, but I used to also say is security is the balance between threats and your assets. If you don't have assets, then the threats don't matter because they're not a threat to your assets. And sort of vice versa, if you will. But the net of it is that we spend a lot of time kind of in the technology space and whatever, but we really have to embrace and understand the assets, really get a hold of it. And that's become extremely difficult, like borderline impossible. And then the threats become very dynamic in their own way. And so that's what's creating this interesting set of complexity. And so it kind of makes you wonder, how far will these two pillars reach off into the horizon to the point where there is no way to stitch them, the environment between them together to make a truly defendable position against them to protect your assets, because your assets are all over the world or they may be in the cloud and stuff that's becoming incredibly blurry.
Well, so you mentioned the cloud, and I was gonna take that in this direction too. I was gonna bring this to you and go, okay, so for the assets that if I have a finite amount of assets, there's 10 of them, I can protect them pretty damn well, right? I can make sure they're patched, I can make sure they're well monitored. But the more assets, the attacker, let me step back. So the attacker against known assets generally has to be, in my opinion, pretty damn clever to get past me and not be detected. The type of attacker that can get past me on assets I have no idea exist, i.e. assets in the cloud, for example, right? When you've got have credit card, will DevOps kind of mentalities out there, right? Suddenly you've got VMs being stood up with potentially customer-sensitive information, potentially sensitive business processes. You as a CISO have no idea that they exist. The type of attacker that can be effective against those is almost that C-leaguer as opposed to the nation-state actor, because frankly, if you don't know it exists, what's the security posture on it? You have no idea. Odds are it's zero or damn near close, right?
That's exactly right. And so actually, I'm not even sure how to add to your point. It was perfectly stated. Is the more you understand your environment, the more that you can begin to build controls in places that can minimize that sort of, oh, this other server over here in some back room kind of thing, or a VM that just got stood up, right, to your point. And the thing is if somebody can get and just sort of scan all the time and kind of begin to look around, you become just a target of opportunity. And so therefore anybody can hack into you with pretty much off-the-shelf tools. I mean, we have a lot of things out there that you can take somebody and quickly make them effective. I did a little experiment. This is about, admittedly, maybe about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I was working with a group, and I was trying to demonstrate exactly the point I'm trying to make. So my son at the time, he was, I don't know, maybe 14 or something, not a huge technologist. And I sat him down and I taught him how to use AirCrack in about 30 minutes. We went together to this thing, put everything on a USB stick, and I said, okay, let's go. We plugged the USB stick in, booted off of it, or just started using the applications off of it, and before you knew it, we had control and could be able to see everybody's wireless traffic. And I didn't touch the computer one since at all. And the point I was trying to make to the people in the room was, this is what you're dealing with, is that you're dealing with a really progressive set of tools, and this was a long time ago. Now it's crazier.
Point and click.
So your point about not knowing what's out there, that problem has increased exponentially, right? You know, and then simultaneously, the C players are actually becoming pretty capable simply because the tools are becoming. And Don Parker, years ago, back in, what was it? I want to say he wrote Don Parker, Cybercrime, Fighting Cybercrime. I think he published that in early 90s, and he wrote about all this, about the one day there'll be tools kind of thing, and boy he nailed it. Yeah. So the cost of entry is quite low, very very low, because of tools, you know.
And you think about the other side of that equation, the cost of defense. I mean, how expensive is it to hire talent industry, never mind trying to find them?
Oof. Well, it's the classic, you have to defend every potential problem, hacker only has to find one. That formula has not changed in the history of security at all. It goes back to war and ancient times, if you will. But the fact of the matter is because, and not just because of the threat, I would say that security has become extraordinarily popular. It's become a popular career. There's a lot of people talking about it. A lot of people need it. There's a push in that direction, and that's healthy. That's good, because the outcome, hopefully, is we have better security. But the fact of the matter is it takes a long time in some cases to kind of really understand the technology and be effective. And so it's those particular people to be able to help stitch that together. They're far and few between, quite frankly. But that doesn't mean that – I mean, there's a slew of people out there that are getting certifications, getting exposed to these technology, getting exposed to places like companies like we work at that help develop them professionally. And these are all things that are very positive direction. But there is a gap. And it's not necessarily because the threats are getting better, even though that is true. It's just because the stakes are higher. The stakes are much higher, and with regards to data, the impacts of that, and the fact that it's everywhere. So helping to corral that into a point, like you said earlier, if I knew I had these 10 assets, I'd be pretty strong. The fact of the matter is, your analogy of something just popping up and then getting attacked, which means it lowers its or increases its potential for being, you know, attacked.
Yeah.
That is the reality of today. That was not the case as great.
Well,
you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, in order to, you know, stand up a vulnerable server onto the internet, you had to go order hardware. It had to come from CDW or HP or Dell or IBM or from somewhere. You had to go physically install it, mount it into a rack. Like, that took time, even to do it wrong, right? And people would know about the fact that there's a new server on the rack. You'd go, well, that's weird. And suddenly, you know, if you had a good or even a mediocre security team – or a mediocre networking team, you'd have to allocate a public IP address, which meant if you had decent processes, somebody in security would go, hey, wait a minute, what is that thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I can literally take a corporate card and go stand up 10,000 Amazon or Azure instances in seconds and not getting anybody's permission. Now, that's done wonders for business agility. I mean, let me be clear. That has done amazing things for companies being competitive and getting prototypes to market and all this stuff, right? That has not done security any favors. And even though a lot of these public cloud providers are building security, I guess, well, you know, natively into the tool sets, the capabilities into the environment, if you don't know it's there as the end user and you don't understand how to use it, it doesn't matter that they're there.
It's true. And moreover, is those security controls that are being developed in those cloud scenarios that you just described can be somewhat complex. You have to really understand them. It's not like configuring a firewall like in the old days when I become like a checkpoint expert. When
inbound,
you get into these
rules.
Yeah, exactly, right? Rule zero. And to be able to really get a handle on these cloud environments and make it as effective or at least more effective than your internal security posture, that's not an insignificant challenge. And it's interesting you mentioned this because years ago, I remember when the first sort of early versions of ESX came out and companies would load up these websites so that they would allow people to set up servers. And I remember working with one particular client, and I think within a month they had something like 30,000 servers in their entire environment, completely out of control. Everything was everywhere. And I was like, well, how many did you have before you rolled this out? And it's like, maybe, 1,000. I'm like, whoa, we need to start changing things. And it still exists to this day, but and you're putting it within the context of the cloud, which is the future of all this, no matter what. And it is not insignificant. And I know there's a lot of vendors out there that are building really compelling solutions to drive out that cloud security, but it's becoming intensely complex. So that even further increases the gap of available people that helps us deal with that, right?
Yeah. Well, and that kind of brings me back to that point of, you do a lot of consulting as well. You're out there in the field quite a bit. I thought probably when we first recorded episode 102 and probably significantly before that, if you could go look at some of the talks I gave back when I worked for you and even before, a lot of my platform was you can't protect what you don't know, and if you don't know it, then it's time to go figure it out before you try to do security, right? So ITIL, I became a big fan of ITIL and discovery and process, and I didn't make any friends in security as a result because it was all about, we're just going to go secure it. And it's like, okay, well, time out. Change management is an important thing. I think being agile and being able to move on the fly, and it's all great, but and change control, proper change control, and this asset discovery and asset registries and all these things, they are not sexy. They do not come with awesome press releases and black hat talks, but if you can't do them, if you can't get a handle on them, none of the other crap you do matters from a defensive perspective. It just doesn't.
No, and I was actually going to – I'm really glad you brought this up because I was going to tie back to this in part of our early conversation about, people out there trying to deal with the latest security technology and stuff. There's kind of a subconscious, subliminal thing that's happening here, and that is simply because to really be secure, it's actually really boring work, and you have to do all the blocking and tackling. You have to go through and make sure that on every regular basis, you're investigating the conditions of your controls, the conditions of your systems, and I think still to this day, I mean, how much we still talk about patch management. People are like, oh, you got to patch your systems, which is very true, right? But we also know that not doing so just completely opens yourself up to, to all kinds of things, right? And so the net of it is the fact of the matter is that it's not fun and to do fun stuff. That's why you see a lot of people on pen testing and doing really cool stuff, right? I would bet that the companies out there that are off the radar, that are getting attacked, but they're not getting those attacks aren't successful. I guarantee you, there's people on there just pounding away every day of making sure those fundamentals the change. I used to be a big DIACAP guy. I thought that was really cool with compartmentalization. That eventually gave way to 853 philosophies, which is great. And those things, those special publications, those 800 series, which have been around seemingly forever, you can go back to the literally very early versions and you just do what they say and you're going to be in pretty good shape right out of the gate. Now, granted, that doesn't mean you still don't need technology. That doesn't mean you're still not dealing with problems. But what happens is you're raising the tide, right? You're bringing all the things up to a particular level. And what that does, it minimizes these huge gaps in your environment or the potential for them to surface, to your point earlier about, you know, throwing up a VM server or even in the cloud kind of thing. But, you know, of course, businesses want that fast reaction. That time to market is critical for all the reasons we know, which is also, you know, one of the nemeses, if you will, of security. But we have to find a way. It's not just being in the board. And I know that's a big deal. And we need that exposure. And I think we've gotten to that point in many cases, right? But what it really comes down to is helping collaborate very tightly with the business and creating a balance where you're saying yes, but they understand that evolution, right? And we've seen that be successful in different parts. So like DevOps is a direct outcome of those activities in the development of software, which didn't exist 5, 6, 10 years ago. But now it seems to be very common. That building a relationship with the business, so you're not saying no, but you're not just saying yes and checking a box. It's helping them achieve that objective, but doing so in a methodical way. The change management you talked about, or the ITIL, the discovery, making sure you're going through these steps. And importantly to that, if I may be so bold to say, is the wrapper of governance of that process. So you're constantly interrogating the act of doing those things and always looking for opportunities for improvement, which gets us into the capability maturity model philosophies. These things, I believe, are very foundational, but they don't have little blinky lights and there's no fancy dashboards. it's hard to get people excited about doing that kind of stuff.
Well, on the topic of checking the box, there was a debate that every once in a while pops up every time a major breach happens. Somebody mentions, you know, obviously the security, the enterprise space can't regulate itself in terms of what the baselines for security are and how to do security well. Maybe it's time for the government to step in. And I have the same reaction every time. No.
Absolutely not.
Well, but you think about how – the unfortunate fact is we aren't doing a very good job of self-policing. So when you look at 10 years ago, maybe even – we all laughed at PCI DSS because, just check the boxes. Like, it's fairly comprehensive now. And I would argue in an average organization, if you're following PCI DSS, if you're following the NIST CSF and some of the, you know, and to the spirit of it, not just the letter of it, because sometimes there's a major difference there. But I would argue that actually you're probably doing pretty damn good. Right? I mean,
I don't disagree. You know, I remember when PCI was still CISP, right? It was just Visa and MasterCard's SPD program. So, but I'll point out the obvious is that's not really government, right? That was the industry getting a hold of itself, right? I think that's where it is. I mean, but again, I'm old and crickety, right? So I was around with GLBA and HIPAA and all that kind of stuff, and it was just like, ugh. And so now, you know, HIPAA, I mean, I know, would you say the same thing about HIPAA? Do you feel like our healthcare system is more secure now that we're 20 years post HIPAA, right? And I'm not sure the answer is yes, right?
I'm not either. I think it's forcing the conversation, though, which is good, at a risk officer level that's not in information security, that's not enterprise security. Mm. So what those regs do is they force somebody in a position that's not a techie to go, hey, this could adversely impact our business. Hey, CISO, wait, we don't have a CISO? Shouldn't we have a CISO? This says we should. Like, what's a CISO?
That's a really good point. Raph, that's a really, really good point. And you're absolutely right. I think one could argue security is taken seriously because of the impacts, but I think when you put dollars around it and then you put requirements that the government says, look, you have to deal with this, it creates a different rhythm. And so you start to say, okay, well, now that we really need to look at it because the government says so. But so your point, I guess, where it is, the point being is that will government regulation make security better? That I have a hard time with. But having government insist on you achieve these certain levels of capability, and in doing so, you know, instill a chief security officer or do these types of fundamentals, do a risk assessment, which, you know, we have things like special public publications that tell us very good ways of doing these things.
Right.
That you're I absolutely agree with that. I never really thought of it that direction because I always kind of like, government,
so telling
us what to do.
I hang around with Sean too much, and this is how I know. Love you, Sean, is because my thinking immediately has gone from we need to do better security to the reason I think government regulation is not the answer, but it is a nudge in the right direction, is it creates potentially laws, and laws are a basis for taking a company to court, and taking a company to court, say, sets court precedent, and then there's like ugly things that can happen if you get taken to court and found, you know, negligent, right? You can there's some very serious things that could happen. You know, a company could lose its ability to process customer data. You could get your business license revoked, I guess. Your executives could conceivably be punished in terms of, you know, go to jail. The fines, the, you know, loss of government contracts, that kind, it's more than just because you want to believe as a consumer that you have the power to say that company didn't take my privacy and or data security seriously. I'm not going to buy from them. But then you go, yeah, but the alternatives suck. Damn it, I'm stuck. Right?
Yeah.
But if because the consumer, we want to believe in a capitalist system that we have the power, the consumer has the power. Because the world has changed over the last 15 years, like I dare you not to buy from Amazon anymore.
Boy, you know me all too well.
Right? I mean, I've got an Amazon delivery scheduled for tomorrow afternoon. Let's face it.
I got one every day. It's a little brown box. Seriously. Shows up every day. It's ridiculous.
I've got to know my UPS guy. But that's the net of it is when I joked about this, but when the Target breach happened, literally the new credit card showed up. I was like, oh man, Target got breached. As I, and you know, people are like, oh, you gotta go stop going to Target. I'm like, no, in fact, I'm on my way to go pick up diapers right now.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, because they're a mile and a half from the house, and it's 11:15 at night, and everything else is closed, and the Walmart's an additional 2 miles. And the other places are too, you know, the round-the-clock pharmacy is twice as much. So I'm going to the place that I always go to, and the credit card is easily interchangeable, and oh well. I mean, you can't go back and like redo your medical records, your credit history. Thank you so much. But stuff like that. I mean, like I feel completely powerless against it as a consumer. So you've already touched on this. The industry becomes the consumer becomes apathetic and goes, eh. And we just go, well, at this point, I'm hoping that my information has been stolen enough times that I become not interesting. My credit profile is not interesting to somebody. That's trying to defraud, and that's kind of what my defense is. Like, have not rockstar credit, and you're all right. I don't know, but that I think that's going to continue to evolve. I think that's for the next time we do this in another year or so, maybe less than 5 years, Jim. But that might be the next topic of conversation.
So I think I've never actually. I mean, I have, but I've been admittedly sort of anti that, but and while you were talking, I'm thinking, why am I like that? And I think what it comes down to is, and this is going to sound really terrible and kind of egotistical, but for me, it's like these problems are so obvious, right? Why do we need government to say, here it is? But when you said making laws, it made me really think about some of the laws in the UK and the formation of organizations that exist specifically to make sure those laws are intact, right? So we see things like PCI and that kind of stuff, which isn't a law, but it is sort of got something with teeth, right? And what you're suggesting is having these laws holds companies accountable, right? And you're right. I think there is something to be said for that. I think we're probably going to see a lot of this surface up, especially with the advent of GDPR. And then what we're seeing kind of surface in California and now in other states, maybe that begins to drive certain law structures that really focuses on the data, right? And so it kind of gets back to, yeah, the outcome or the personal effects of what happened with something like Target. I think that's a sound argument. I need to get out of my old man chair and rethink that about a little bit. I've always been anti-government involvement.
Well, put your bourbon and cigar down for a second, right?
Right, exactly. That is absolutely correct.
Well, sir, we have run out of time, and I think we're just slightly over, but it has been 42 minutes of my pleasure, as always.
I really appreciate it, Raph. I really do. I really enjoy it. I hope we can get a chance to do this again in the near future, but it's always a sincere pleasure to get to spend time with you, Michael.
Well, next time I'm bringing the mic over to your place, and we're going to do beers and whiskey and cigars on your back porch there. That'll be a much much better venue than over the internet.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Awesome having you. Folks, thanks for listening. This has been episode 362 of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast with Mr. Jim Tiller, real_security on Twitter. The guy that wrote half the books on your shelf behind you there, if you've been around the industry long enough. So big thanks to Jim for a little bit of time here. And folks, like I said, if you've got questions, comments, feel free. Read the damn show notes. That's why I post them. Sometimes I leave Easter eggs for you to find. It has been awesome. Thanks for listening. Jim, once again, thanks for being on the show, buddy. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on another place, another time, on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Ciao, y'all.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Our website is whiterabbit.net, whiterabbit.net. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.